Hey guys, welcome to another episode of True Crimes and Weird Times. I'm Ashley.
And I'm Kim.
And this week is our favorite episode of the year, our Halloween episode. Tonight, we're sharing a few listener tales, some other miscellaneous Halloween fun.
And I'm going to be telling you about the murder of Timothy O'Brien, a little boy who died after eating a pixie stick he got trick-or-treating. And this story is why so many parents check their children's candy every Halloween.
Ooh. So let's start with our listener tales. We have a couple.
Okay.
The first one was sent in to us by a listener named Alana, and we want to go ahead and say thank you. Woohoo!
Thank you so much.
And her email reads, "My name is Alana, and I live in Cleveland, Ohio, in what was my paternal grandparents' home. My grandmother would never allow anyone to smoke in her home. My youngest daughter, who was in her 20s at this time, stayed in my grandmother's bedroom. We moved in late 2015, and the ceiling fan and light in that room has never worked. My daughter smoked, and she usually went outside, but one day she stayed inside and smoked in her room because it was cold. The next morning, after she left for work, I was in the bathroom next to her room getting ready to go to work myself when I heard the ceiling fan in my grandmother's room going full blast. The one that's never worked, remember?
Ooh.
When I went in, the switch was in the off position. I backed out and closed the door, and it went off by itself a few minutes later. When my daughter came home, I told her that her great-grandmother was pissed off at her for smoking in her room, and she better not do it again."
That's fantastic.
I love it.
I love stories where the ghost is just kind of like, "Hey, quit being a dick.
Stop it. Just quit." And I would like to know if she ever, like, smoked in there again and if anything else happened.
I know.
I wouldn't, for sure.
Definitely not.
But thank you, Alana. That was awesome.
So our next one was sent in by actually a friend of mine. Her name is Shayna, and she's amazing.
Thank you, Shayna.
And I know Shayna through my in-laws. I kind of married into the family, and she can read cards, which is really cool.
Yeah.
So we've talked about it before because I've always been super interested in it.
Right.
And in her own words, she said, "I've always had this ability to sense things, like how people feel or what the outcome of something will be. And I always knew when something would turn out well or not before it happened. Then I learned how to read cards, but not the traditional tarot decks. I used playing cards and read cards with more of a mountain magic feel, not by any real protocol."
Okay. And you know what? A lot of people actually do that.
It was really cool. She did a reading for me, and actually, I can talk a little bit about my reading.
Okay, yeah.
But she also did a reading for my sister-in-law while I was there, and several of the predictions in that one came true.
Ooh, really?
But she also says, "In all my years of reading cards, I have accurately predicted 3 deaths, and I also predicted the reunion of someone Kim knows pretty well, which was my mother and father-in-law."
Oh, wow.
Which, that's my mother-in-law and father-in-law, not my mother and my father-in-law.
Yeah. I knew what you meant, but yeah, good clarification.
She says, "I predicted the death of my younger cousin 3 months before he died."
Oh, wow.
"My coworker's husband 1 month before he died, and the stepmother of my ex-husband's cousin," which was my stepmother-in-law, actually.
Oh, wow.
"And that particular occurrence is also what actually led to the reunion of my mother-in-law and father-in-law."
Oh, okay. Wow, that's freaky.
So to build a little bit more off of Shayna's relay of information here, because I've been, you know, talking to her and getting some follow-up questions answered here. Mm-hmm. And I was asking her particularly, you know, who taught her how to read cards? And she said that it was her aunt, who also has a gift about, you know, reading people and sensing things.
Okay.
And she told Shayna she could practice with the cards, but they're just a tool because she's actually reading the people, not the cards.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
So the cards just kind of help you hone in on what you're sensing, essentially.
Right. I like that.
Shayna actually doesn't read cards anymore after the death of her cousin. She's able to just read people now. And she's actually my son's pediatrician,
believe it or not.
And
hey.
She said that it helps her out a lot with her patients. Like, she can kind of get a read on people with stuff. Yeah.
No, I get that. That's actually not a bad thing to have in that kind of occupation.
Yeah. And I asked her a little bit more about actually reading the cards, because I always thought it was really cool how she did mm-hmm. it. And when she did my reading, she had me shuffle the deck to, like, put my energy into the cards. Right. And then she pulled 3 cards, I believe, as long as I'm remembering it right, and it represented your past, present, and future.
Okay.
And she lets you ask 1 question for each of those. So you could ask a past, a present, and a future question.
Like after the fact and or before?
Before.
Oh, okay.
So after you ask your question, she would start flipping cards.
Mm-hmm.
And she would lay one down, and then she would sometimes look at it and sometimes lay 1 or 2 more down before saying anything. And she explained to me that the first card was kind of like the answer card, but the other ones were more like clarification.
Okay, yeah.
So if it was really vague from the first one, you can kind of narrow it down from the next ones.
Okay.
But there were also times she could lay down 1 card and just give us an answer.
Okay, that's really cool.
But as far as the deaths that she predicted...
Mm-hmm.
So, like I said, one of them actually was my stepmother-in-law, and it happened during my sister-in-law's reading. Oh. And I believe, if I remember, now this was 7 years ago.
Oh, okay, yeah.
But I believe she said it was going to be within the next year. It could have been a shorter time frame than that, mm-hmm. but she didn't end up passing away not too long after that. Which, to be fair, though, she did have breast cancer.
Oh, okay. Oh, I do remember that.
So it's kind of one where it's like you could be skeptical and say, okay, but...
Yeah, but I mean, to be able to say, you know, within a year, that's not something I would want to put my money on unless I felt it.
Right.
Yeah.
And she actually also, during that reading, predicted that my mother-in-law and father-in-law would end up back together. Now, at this time, obviously he's married to my stepmother-in-law.
Right.
But here we are now, 8 years later, and my in-laws live together.
Oh, wow.
They share a house.
Wow.
And she was right. I mean, they got back together.
See, that's wild.
Even with my stepmother-in-law's blessing, like before she passed away.
Oh, wow.
Told them that she wanted them to be together if that's what they wanted.
Yeah. Did they know anything about this reading, or was it just your sister-in-law?
I am not sure if my sister-in-law told her about it or not.
Okay.
I didn't tell them about
it. Yeah.
And she had also predicted in that reading that another family member who had several children
mm-hmm.
would, within a few years, end up with only 1 child left in their care.
Ooh.
And at the time, my sister-in-law sat there trying to figure out, like, how? They have so many. Like, how would they get down to just 1 child?
Right.
And somehow, here we are, you know, 5 years later, mm-hmm. and that family member only has 1 child in their care at this time.
Oh, wow. See, that's
the other
super
ones,
spooky.
You know, got older. They moved out early as teenagers mm-hmm. and... You know, just different circumstances, and they all are gone except for the 1.
Wow. Yeah, that's pretty precise.
Yep.
Shayna, if you're listening, would you ever be interested in coming over?
We definitely need to get her on the show to do a reading for us.
That would be so cool.
And put the less personal things in, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. But that'd be really cool.
Now, as for the 2 other deaths that she predicted... One of them was the death of one of her coworkers.
Oh, wow.
And she said that it would be within the next year.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this was a man who was not sick. He did not have cancer.
Oh.
There were no indications that his end was near or anything.
Uh-huh.
But within the year, he had a heart attack and passed away.
Oh, wow. See, this is kind of why maybe I don't want her to read.
Right.
Yeah, please don't find that out.
The other one was her younger cousin. And that one was a much tighter time frame because, you know, he was her younger cousin. And I don't know. I don't think 30 is very old. But Shayna and I aren't very old either.
Yeah.
So he was younger than us.
Uh-huh.
And she predicted it would be within 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And he was actually hit while riding his bicycle and passed away within the 6 months.
Wow. So I wonder, and I don't know if you can answer it. It'd probably be more of a question for Shayna, but like, how is it, like a gut feeling? Like, where does the time frame come from, I guess? Because I know it's not going to be like right down to the second, but I'm just curious where she got like 6 months, you know what I mean?
Well, at the time she was still doing card readings. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure that they would have come from laying down the cards to tell her what the time frame would
be. Okay, no, that makes sense. I mean, that's how you do tea reading, too. Like, there's particular spots in the cup that tells you time frames. Not that I know how to do it, but I'm just saying. I can understand that, using the tools.
Mm-hmm. But I've always thought that Shayna's readings and things were super cool, and I loved watching her do it, and I've always just been, like, in awe of her. So I'm super glad that she sent us this stuff to share with you guys. And I really hope we can get her on the show because...
That would be really cool.
If there's, you know, if there's some real psychics out there, I really think she's one of them.
Yeah. Oh, well, I mean, you've got me convinced, but it doesn't take much for me to be convinced.
And this is coming from Kim the Skeptic, who shoots down every one of Ashley's...
I was
going to
say, I mean, you're hearing it from her, not me. That's all I'm saying.
Like, I remember talking to her once about how she had this one, like, favorite episode of this TV show that she liked. And she rarely ever turned it on to watch that show because that one was her favorite episode and she really didn't watch the other ones. And I can't remember what show it was. But she was telling me that when she did decide to watch that show, like, if she ever decided to turn it to that show, it was always when her favorite episode was playing.
Ooh, that's cool. Hey, I need that.
Yeah.
If I don't have anything else, that's what I want.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that would be really cool if we could get her on.
Absolutely. You hear that, Shayna?
Come on.
Give us a call.
Come on. All right. Well, cool. And like we said, thank y'all for sharing. And listeners, you're always more than welcome to send in any time of the year. Spooky stories, true crime stories, anything, everything, all of it. We want to hear it.
And now on to our creepy Halloween stuff.
Yeah, let's do our hodgepodge Halloween stuff. Because Kim did most of the work this time about writing an actual story. Nerd.
I know. Guys, we even had this plan. Like, we're not going to do real stories. We're just going to talk about Halloween stuff.
Yeah, just candid
talk. And then I was like, that's a great plan, Ashley. Let's do that. And then I texted her the next day. I was like, so I wrote my story.
But it's a good story. It's a good story. And you know what? Like I said, I have a great segue for it.
Yep.
So I'm hoping you all will be very pleased. And if not, don't leave us a bad review. Okay. So... First up, like I said, I was going candid this time, so I rated some horror movies.
She did it because I can't.
Well, yeah, that was part of it. I knew you don't watch them. So don't come at me. These are my opinions, and they're going to be wrong to somebody. I know it. So don't yell at me. But you're more than welcome to give me your ratings. That would be wonderful. Let's discuss it. First up, I'm going with the one I just watched recently. It's Midnight Mass. I'm sure a lot of people heard of it. In fact, Kim watched some of this. That's what we were just talking about.
Yeah, I watched a few, well, kind of episodes. My husband really watched it, and I happened to be in the room for part of it.
Actually, what did he think about it? Did he like it?
He liked it. I mean, he wasn't, you know, raving about it, but he thought it was good.
Yeah. It is a slow burn show. I mean, it's Mike Flanagan. If you know who that is, he did Hill House, Bly Manor on Netflix too. So they're slow burns, but I like him. But
now I did watch Hill House.
Yeah,
and I really like
it. Yeah, it's kind of like that. I mean, it's just the way he writes characters. That's what I like about him.
I mean, I watched it through my fingers, but I watched it.
Well, see, that's something else too. He doesn't do a ton of jump scares, like maybe one a season or something. But like, but he rots in a way that's really haunting.
Keeps you on the edge of your seat. Like you're always waiting for something creepy
to
happen.
Yeah, that's it. You're waiting for it, but it, yeah, it's just like, it keeps you tense the entire time. That's a good way to put it. But Midnight Mass in particular, I give this 4.8 out of 5 communion chalices. Like I said, I mean, I pretty much told you everything to begin with. I just like the way he writes. I like the way he writes human emotions. It's all really like haunted. It can keep you uncomfortable and on the edge of your seat. Like you said, that's perfect. I don't know. That's just me personally. I liked it though. It's a nice slow burn. People are going to hate me for the next one. Hereditary. I gave it 2 out of 5 sisters' heads. if anybody knows the story, I'm not going to spoil it. You understand why. I went into this one really excited. The commercials, the trailers kind of made it look one way and was really pumped up for it and it ended up being a slow burn. Again, I'm not worried about that, but it had just like a really lazy ending.
That's the worst.
Yeah. To me, it was a lazy ending. I don't know. People love this movie, but like, it just felt like it was all of this and then like, and then it was this, the end, whatever. Again, I don't want to spoil it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just kind of sat there like, So, yeah. The next one is The Witch. I gave it 3.7 out of 5 Black Phillips, which is the black goat from the movie.
So, I've never watched this movie, but my husband and I see it on, like, Netflix and stuff all the time, and we always call it the VV Itch.
Yeah, the VV Itch, which doesn't sound real great, does it? Sounds like you need to go to the doctor.
No.
Actually, I mean, I had to watch this more than once. The first time it was just like, because it's a super, super slow burn. But I mean, it works for the story. And because it's kind of set in older times. So it kind of, I don't know, just kind of works for the aesthetic, I guess. I don't know. I liked it. I didn't hate it. I'm not raving about it, but I liked it.
It was a solid okay.
It was solid okay. The next one, I wasn't sure if I could consider it a horror movie, but I think I can. It's Mother, the movie with Jennifer Lawrence.
Yeah, so I remember this one. I remember the trailers for it. And I remember being so weirded out by the trailers and stuff. Like, it looked so bizarre that I knew I couldn't watch it because I can't watch horror movies. I have panic attacks. So I looked it up and I read the synopsis for the movie. Like I read what happens in the movie. So I'm so glad I never watched this.
Yeah, you would have been so uncomfortable. I was uncomfortable watching this. Me and my mom went to the movies and watched this.
Ew.
I mean, not because it was named Mother or anything. It was just like, oh, this looks kind of cool. Let's watch it. Because she watches horror movies too. And it was uncomfortable to watch. Before I say all that, I give it 3.5 out of 5 babies. again, we sat at the theater and it was one of those, like, I kept going, oh my God, oh my God. Cause it's so much weirder than the trailers. Even at the end, we just had to kind of sit there in our seats for a minute, just kind of processing the whole thing. What we just saw was so strange. But I did like the metaphors and the symbolism they used. There were parts where I was going, oh yeah. I mean, we're in the Bible Belt. I know my Bible stories. So it was kind of like, oh, okay, I can see that. That makes sense. And then you get to that one part and you go, oh my God. And then I was like, oh, okay, I kind of get it, I guess. I like the symbolism. I don't know if I'd ever rewatch it. I'll give it another solid okay. The next one I have, probably a lot of people are not going to count, is Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. It's a PG-13 movie. It's not particularly horror, but I'm going to make a good guess about our demographic, and most of us have either heard of or read these stories growing up.
I don't think that I ever watched it, but I definitely have heard of it.
Yeah. Did you ever read the stories? I mean, you read the stories, right?
No.
Well, no, you probably didn't.
I did not.
That would make sense. Like, I grew up with these, so, like, of course I'm going to go watch it for nostalgia's sake. I'm going to give this one a 2.7 out of 5 toes. Again, if you know the stories, you know why. I mean, I watched it because I read it as a kid. I enjoyed seeing some of the stories come to life in the movie, but I hated that it was a PG-13 movie. They could have done a lot more.
Could have been better.
Yeah, it could have been better. The next one, again, I'm kind of throwing in. I'm pretty sure it can be considered a horror movie. It's called The Hunt. It's not necessarily scary. It's just more gore than anything. I'm giving this one a 4.5 out of 5 entitled Rich White People.
There you go.
It was actually really good. We picked this one just kind of randomly one night, and we didn't know anything about it. We just kind of went, we'll see. And by the end of it, I mean, I was just cheering on the main character. It's a really good movie. It's not what you expect. I don't know. It's really good. I liked it. And I don't want to give anything away, but it's pretty good. And like I said, it's not scary. There's no jump scares necessarily. It's just a lot of gore. A lot of people dying.
I can handle that.
Yeah.
I can't handle the jump scares.
And it, I mean, it's got funny parts to it. It's not like super serious or anything. It's really good. You might can watch this for sure. The next one is The Ritual, which I'm pretty sure you can watch on Netflix still. I give this one 4 out of 5 Woodland Gods. again, this was another one that I was just like kind of doing laundry and I was looking for something scary one night and it looked scary. So I kind of just watched it without knowing anything about it. And I enjoyed it. I like how they got to the ending. And then I enjoyed the fact that it was based on mythology. That one always gets me.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's really good. Next one is Horns. 3.8 out of 5, I guess, Horns. I came for Harry Potter. Daniel Radcliffe stars in it. Stayed for the story. I liked it. Pretty good.
I see. That's another one I remember trailers for, but I never watched it.
Again, not necessarily scary. You could probably watch that one too. But it's I've heard people consider it horror, and I'm kind of throwing it in there as horror too. It's pretty good. Midsummer. That's another popular one. See, I tried not to go for like the classics. I didn't want to do that. We all know what the classics are. I wanted to get some stuff that like I'm sure we've watched, but like nobody really talks about. So this one, Midsummer, 3.5 out of 5 bears. It was, strange from the beginning. It was strange to the end. However, they kept it super uncomfortable on purpose. I really liked that. I was okay with the revenge ending. And I enjoyed the symbolism in this one. Symbolism in mythology. You're going to get me. That's why Paranormal Activity is like a guilty pleasure movie.
Oh my God. Okay, I did watch Paranormal Activity a long time ago, right after it came out.
Yeah.
Because once upon a time, I didn't have panic attacks and I could watch horror movies and I loved them. But, Paranormal Activity, all I could do was laugh at that one.
Yeah.
It was not scary for me at all.
No, I remember being scared of it the first time, but that was basically because I had to sleep by myself in the dark. So, but, I mean, it really is just a guilty pleasure movie now. We just watch all of them. So.
See, they lost me when they put, like, the baby powder down for the footprints. And then they show the footprints, and my immediate comment was, are they being haunted by Big Bird?
Oh, my God. I need to see a cover of Paranormal Activity with Big Bird in it. Somebody who's better at Photoshop, do this now, please.
Yep.
The last one, last but not least, Happy Death Day. It is not necessarily scary. It's kind of like a Scream-ish vibe. It's stupid. It's cheesy. Hang on. Before I say all of that, I guess, I'm giving this one 4 out of 5 cupcakes. My husband also suggested that I put this one in. So, because he really loves this one. But like I said, it's cheesy. It's funny. It's just a silly movie. But I did like it. And it's not bad for a PG-13 movie. The second one's weird. The first one I liked. But like I said, tell me your ratings. I want to know.
Because I'm not going to tell her mine. Because I'm not going to watch it.
I was going to say, Kim is giving 0 out of 5 everything. Because she did not watch it. So, that's the first bit of hodgepodge. Next, we're talking about some urban legends. And I picked 4. 4 that I haven't necessarily heard of. Hopefully, they're not super popular, but they're popular enough to be found on Google, let's be honest. But I'm just going to give you the stories. We're not going to talk about true or not true like we usually do. I'm just going to give you the stories. And if you're nearby, go figure it out. You tell us.
Mm-hmm.
So, first up is Dudley Town, Connecticut. This is a cursed ghost town in Connecticut. So Dudley Town didn't always start as Dudley Town. It was first known as Owlsbury. And settlers came to this place in the mid-18th century, which included the very first Dudleys, the Dudley family, who helped found the town, hence its later name. It started as a thriving non-industry community and then started to decline afterwards. I mean, that's what towns did. Just economy. However, townsfolk believed the Dudleys were cursed, mostly because they kind of just met untimely demises that, I mean, just ranged from strange deaths, suicides, and even alleged demonic possessions.
Wow.
Yeah. However, they also believed that that curse kind of extended throughout the town. So eventually, everyone left the town, and it just turned into a ghost town, no pun intended. And, I mean, the forest just kind of reclaimed it. It's just kind of overgrown and left.
Oh, I love those, though.
Yeah, I do, too.
I love going through ghost towns. They are so cool.
Of course, that led to so many stories of demons and paranormal experiences. However, now you really can't go into Dudley Town. It's privately owned and looked after by an entity named the Dark Entry Forest Association, which is a super creepy name.
Yeah.
That just opens up another world of questions. I don't know. Is it some kind of cult? Meh, I don't know. But you will most definitely be arrested and they will prosecute you for being on the property. Yeah. So I'm thinking cults and, I don't know, sacrifices. I don't know, something you're not supposed to see. Obviously. I'm on to you. If I disappear, that's why.
Road trip.
Next up is the Seven Gates of Hell, which is in York County, Pennsylvania. There are actually a few different versions of this urban legend, but the most popular one is this. It used to be a mental institution on Toad Road or Trout Run Road in Hellam Township, Pennsylvania. It was built in a remote location to kind of isolate those they deemed mentally unfit to, you know, live in society. It was a mental asylum. However, in the 1900s, a fire broke out and they tried to get everyone out. But like due to the isolation of the property, the firefighters couldn't even get in to put out the fire.
Wow.
Yeah. So many patients and staff died in this fire. And those patients that were able to escape apparently were beaten to death.
What?
Yeah, I couldn't find out why. I don't know. That's why it's an urban legend.
What?
They say that the gates themselves that are in the forest were said to have been put up by search parties to trap in remaining patients from the asylum so they couldn't get out. Another one said that like an eccentric physician, I think it said, put them up. Who knows? That's part of the story that changes all the time. But all of those versions kind of agree on one thing. Only one gate is visible during the day, and it's kind of at the road. And there are six others that are visible only at night, for a total of seven gates.
Huh.
Mm-hmm. Now, according to the legend, if you pass through all seven of these gates, you will go directly to hell.
Oh.
Yeah. However, no one has ever passed through the fifth gate. No one's made it to the fifth gate. I don't know why.
Because they can't find it?
Oh, maybe. I pictured things happening to make them leave.
Or that.
I don't know. But again, nobody can try it because this is private property and trespassers are prosecuted. Womp womp. No fun.
Maybe they're just getting kicked off the property before they can get to the fifth gate.
That's it. I think you're right. That is probably it. The next urban legend is the Bunny Man. And it starts in Fairfax County, Virginia. There was an asylum nearby that local residents didn't like, so they had it shut down and had all the patients transported to a local prison.
Oh, of course, because that's where they need to
be. Right, of course. But, you know, in true urban legend fashion, the bus swerves, the bus crashes, and people escape. However, they were able to find all of the patients except one. Dun, dun, dun.
Ooh.
Now, the man they couldn't find was named Douglas Griffin. And, you know, weeks after his escape, rabbit corpses began to appear, like, tied up in the trees in the nearby woods. They were hung. They were gutted as if, you know, like, he was killing rabbits and eating them to survive in the woods. That was all I heard about him.
I mean, it's creepy, but also, I mean, if he's just eating them, it kind of makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know why. I don't know why you'd leave them. I mean, I guess, okay, that makes sense. No, you're right. However, one Halloween night, a group of teenagers were hanging around a bridge that is located on Colchester Road. They were then next found hanging from the bridge, tied up and gutted, like the rabbits in the woods the next day.
Ooh.
Yeah. Of course, everyone's blaming Douglas Griffin. And now the rumor is that if you come to that bridge on Halloween night, you'll end up just like those kids.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. And the last one is right here in Georgia. I specifically looked for one in Georgia. It is a crybaby bridge in Columbus, Georgia.
We actually have a crybaby bridge here.
No way.
Yes.
Where?
So it's in the Sunnorval area.
Oh.
And it's, I think it's off Love Bridge Road, but I could be wrong. It's been a very long time since we talked about it, but my friends growing up, we were all kind of into the spooky stuff, you know, going to visit Corpsewood and stuff like that. And we talked about Crybaby Bridge and the legend and where it is. And you can go do the thing, which you're about to tell them about. So I'll skip that part.
Yeah, but yeah. Okay.
There's one here. I think crybaby bridges are kind of common here and there, right?
Yeah, it's like everywhere. Yeah, everybody has a crybaby bridge now. And that didn't triangulate us in any way. Ha ha ha, you'll never find us. So, maybe we should take a trip out there one day.
We definitely should.
Okay, so the Crybaby Bridge in Columbus, Georgia specifically, is located on Wattsville Road, just north of Columbus city limits. The original bridge has been torn down, but there are still stories of strange things happening on the new bridge, the one that's there now. Now, there were a couple of different legends with this one. The one I saw the most said that, like, in the 1800s, a poor family was expecting their fifth child. Now, the family couldn't afford to feed another mouth, so the father and the doctor planned to get rid of this baby. Some say without the mother's knowledge, but either way, they were getting rid of the baby. So the doctor, once the baby was delivered, wrapped it up and dropped it over the bridge.
Oh.
Yeah. Another legend that I saw a few times said that a woman drowned her three children in the river below. They're both pretty generic stories, so either one.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. But apparently now, if you stop on that bridge at night, on a full moon with a cloudless sky, you know, you have to sprinkle baby powder around your car, turn your car and your lights off for 10 minutes, and you'll be able to hear a baby crying and sometimes see baby footprints in the baby powder, which I guess ghost babies can walk. I don't know.
I guess so. That's what I was wondering.
But hey, whatever. I'm not going to judge a baby. Who am I to judge a baby? Other occurrences that have been talked about were strange mists and fog. I mean, you're on a bridge. That's where the fog is.
Yeah, that's where fog lives.
Cold spots in the air, sounds of babies, children, and mothers crying in the woods, hearing footsteps in the woods or even around your car, and even spotting ghostly figures in the nearby woods. Your basic hauntings.
I think that our baby bridge has the legend that if you go there, you stop, you turn off the car, you turn off all the lights, and you put your keys on top of the car, and then you maybe do something else, like tell her that you have her baby or something.
Oh, God.
And then she'll take your car keys, and then you can't leave. So I don't know why anyone would ever test that theory.
That sounds awful. I have heard one that if you turn your car off and put it in neutral, that it'll roll by itself or something.
That's the whole point of putting your car in neutral,
well,
though.
That was my point. Also, why I didn't put it in here. But, yeah, those are my urban legends. Again, if you want to share a local urban legend, we'll take those, too.
Oh, yeah. Send us those.
I want to know those, too, because everybody has a spot that's haunted in our towns.
Oh, yeah.
So I want to hear about those, too. Now, one last little hodgepodge. And this is for you, Kim. I bet you've already read them, haven't you?
I actually read the top one. I saw the answer, and then I scrolled back up because I was like, I don't want to see the rest. I'm going to give it my best guess.
Okay. I have a Halloween true or false that everyone can play along with. I was just afraid Kim read my answers. Okay. So you do know the first one.
Yes.
The first one is bobbing for apples was meant to promote fertility. True or false? And that's your turn to answer, folks. That one's true. It is associated with future love, summoning a husband, and celebrating fertility. It's also a very good way to get COVID these days. Please don't play.
Yeah, dunking your head in water to try and grab an apple with your teeth doesn't really scream fertility to me, but I mean, whatever, man.
Whatever. It just seems like a good way to get a cold. The next one, two dogs were executed for using witchcraft during the Salem witch trials. True or false?
I'm going to say, I want to say false, but only because I think that it was one dog, not two, right?
No, it was true. Two were killed.
Okay, okay. I knew there was at least one, but I didn't know there were two.
Yeah, there were two. I couldn't find how the other one was killed, but one was shot to death when it was accused of giving a girl convulsions.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a whole other episode, guys. Let's not even get into that.
Yep.
All right, next one. In the Czech Republic, the country's president does an address in costume on Halloween every year. True or false?
False.
Yeah, it's false. That one just threw in there. I actually saw that on a website somewhere. I thought it was funny.
I was just wondering, do they do Halloween that big in the Czech Republic? I don't know.
You know what? I don't know. I don't, probably not. Probably, maybe not the way we do, I guess. That's the American talking, though. I don't know. The next one is, many animal shelters ban the adoption of black cats during Halloween season.
False?
It is true.
Oh.
However, the fact that they are used in sacrifices and whatever are pretty much a myth, but it is the reason that the adoptions are halted during Halloween. Yeah. Last one. Strangers poison or hide dangerous items in children's candy.
I think I know the answer to this one.
Do you?
I think I'm going to say true, but rarely.
Yes, it's mostly false, but as you will see in just a minute, it has happened before.
Yes.
So I think it was mostly to warn parents just to kind of check candy, see what your kid has in their bucket kind of deal. But there's not a lot of that going around. People are not putting razor blades in your apples.
No, I did read about in the, I don't know, 80s maybe? I can't remember when it happened, but there was apparently a dentist who put a bunch of needles in his Halloween candy that he handed out to kids.
Ew!
But it only made it, like, I think only 30 kids got the candy, and they were all, like, recovered after they figured out what he'd done, and he went to prison, so.
Oh, well, that's good. Good. I feel like, I mean, I don't know, the fat kid in me is just like, I would eat it before I realized.
Right? I would already be taking a bite and be like, oh, crap, I bit a needle.
Yeah. Oh, dang.
Well, if I got a tongue piercing now.
But I will say, I was always told that as a kid. So I was always the nerd, like, pulling out their candy and checking for weird holes and stuff in the wrappers. And, like, if it even looked just a little bit weird, I tossed it just in case. So I don't know. Maybe. But that was my beautiful segue into Kim's true crime story.
So, like we were just saying, we've all heard the horror stories of people finding drugs, razor blades, other terrible things in their Halloween candy. But the truth is, it really doesn't happen that much.
No. Well, in fact, I mean, if you... Nobody can afford to put drugs on their candy anyway. I'm just saying.
Right.
But let me know if you do. I'm just kidding.
Slip a little something in, give it to mom. Not, you know?
Yeah. Moms are going to need it.
That's a joke, guys. We don't do drugs.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
But in fact, since the 1950s, when trick-or-treating really got, you know, going good and it became what it is now, there's only been around 200 reports of candy tampering, and the majority of those were hoaxes.
Oh, wow. Everybody loves Halloween.
Exactly. And I mean, let's face it, just like you said, most people are not going to waste the drugs that they just paid good money for giving them out to children.
Yep.
But that fear of candy tampering has a very valid background. On October 31st, 1974, the O'Brien family had just finished dinner and the children were getting ready to go trick-or-treating. 30-year-old Ronald O'Brien and his wife, Danine, lived in Pasadena, Texas, and had two children, 8-year-old Timothy and 5-year-old Elizabeth. When it was time to leave, Danine stayed home while Ronald took the kids and met up with their neighbor, Jim Bates, and his son to go get some Halloween candy. The group went out and they hit a few houses before coming to a home with the lights off, which, you know, generally means, hey, don't trick or treat here. We're not giving out candy.
Right.
But the kids being kids, they ran up and knocked on the door anyway, and nobody answered, of course. So the group goes ahead and just runs off to the next house. Everyone except for Ronald. Ronald hung back at the house while the other four went on ahead to the next one. A few minutes later, he caught up with the group holding 5 giant pixie sticks. And I'm talking like the 21-inch long kind, the huge ones.
Oh, the good kind, yeah.
Right. And he even made a comment about like, hey, we got some rich neighbors over here handing out the good stuff. You know, like,
wow.
Lucky us.
Yeah.
And he gave each of the 3 children one of the pixie sticks. He gave a 4th one to Jim because he actually had another child, a little girl who wasn't with them that night for whatever reason. And later on, he even gave the last pixie stick to a 10-year-old boy that he just recognized from church. He's like, here, we have an extra. You can have this.
Oh, okay.
The kids finished up their trick-or-treating. Everyone went home with like a nice little candy haul. Later that night, the 2 O'Brien kids were told that they could each eat 1 piece of candy before bed.
Mm-hmm.
And Timothy chose the pixie stick. He had trouble getting the candy open, so he gave it to his dad and Ronald helped him open it. Well, then he tried to pour it in his mouth and the powder was kind of clumped together so it wasn't coming out.
Ooh.
So he gave it back to his dad again and Ronald took it and he kind of rolled it in his hands to loosen up that powder.
Right.
And then he gave it back to Timothy, who, of course, just poured the whole thing in his mouth and just ate it.
Well, yeah, like a kid does.
He pretty quickly told his dad, like, hey, that candy didn't taste right. It tasted bitter. So Ronald gave him some Kool-Aid to kind of wash it down, get the taste out of his mouth. But within minutes, Timothy began complaining of a stomach ache. After that, he ran to the bathroom and began vomiting.
Oh, God.
Minutes after that, the boy began convulsing, and Ronald called an ambulance. Tragically, though, Timothy O'Brien died on the way to the hospital.
Oh, God.
Now, police immediately set to work recovering the other 4 pixie sticks.
Mm-hmm.
And luckily, neither the Bates children or Elizabeth O'Brien had eaten theirs yet.
Oh, good.
The parents of the 5th child were frantically searching for this pixie stick, only to find that their child had fallen asleep holding the candy after he was unable to open it.
Oh, my God.
Because the candy had been stapled closed.
Yeah, see, that's what I'm talking about.
Police ran tests on the pixie sticks, and they found that the top 2 inches in each straw had been laced with a fatal dose of cyanide.
Oh, my God.
All 5 of them. Parents in the city were rightfully terrified.
Yeah.
And the police station was just flooded with bags of Halloween candy because parents were too afraid to let their children eat them. They were all afraid they were poisoned. I wouldn't let my kid eat any Halloween candy.
Yeah, I'd have dumped the whole thing. Exactly.
Over the next couple of days, police interviewed Ronald and they walked him up and down the streets a couple times trying to figure out which house did these pixie sticks come from. But Ronald was super vague about it. He kept saying, it was really dark. I don't really remember which house it was. In fact, I can't even remember which street it was on. We went so many places. I just don't remember.
Right.
And Jim Bates, the neighbor who was with him that night, told police, though, that they only trick-or-treated on 2 streets that night because it was raining.
Yeah. Okay, I see where this is going.
So they asked Ronald, well, what did this person look like? And he says, oh, well, I didn't actually see him. He just stuck his arm out the door and handed me the candy.
Uh-huh.
And the only thing he could tell him about the arm was that it was really hairy.
Okay.
Now, eventually, police put enough pressure on him that Ronald finally said, okay, well, it was this house. This is the house where I got the pixie sticks. Except this house belonged to a man named Courtney Melvin. And Ronald claimed, this is the man who gave me this poisoned candy.
Mm-hmm.
Except there is a problem with that, because Courtney Melvin had been at work that night and didn't get home until almost 11 p.m., which was well past when the children had been out trick-or-treating.
Right.
And he had over 200 people who could vouch for him. His alibi was rock solid.
Good, 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 good.
And that's when they really started digging deeper into Ronald O'Brien.
Mm-hmm.
They pretty quickly discovered that Ronald was over $100,000 in debt.
Oh, God.
And had recently sold his house to pay back some of it, but he still owed a substantial amount of money.
Yeesh.
He was on the verge of losing yet another job after being caught stealing at work.
Uh-huh.
And Ronald had been through 21 jobs in the past 10 years.
Holy cow. I wonder if that was all some kind of issue like that, stealing and such.
I don't know. I didn't find a lot of information about why he went through jobs so quickly.
Yeah.
But clearly there was some issue going on there.
Right, right.
They then discovered that he had 2 life insurance policies out on his children.
Mm.
One had been purchased in January of that year, and another worth $20,000 had been purchased just the month before.
Okay.
They also discovered that Ronald had called about collecting on these policies at 9 a.m. the day after Halloween. Literally just hours after his son died.
Oh my God. What a prick. I'm sorry.
Yep. Police also found that over the summer, Ronald had called an acquaintance who worked at a chemical company to ask him some questions about cyanide, including what was a fatal dose for humans.
He didn't even cover up anything.
Oh, God, no. He was awful at this.
Jeez.
Shortly before Halloween, Ronald had attempted to buy some cyanide at a Houston chemical outlet, but he left after he found out that the smallest amount he could buy was 5 pounds. Which also left me kind of puzzled. Like, who buys 5 pounds of cyanide?
That's what I was getting ready to say.
Why is that the smallest quantity you can buy?
What are the other uses for cyanide? That's a lot of cyanide.
It really is.
That's insane.
But anyway, back to the story. Police actually never discovered where Ronald got the cyanide. He never owned up to it. He maintained his innocence all the way through his trial because obviously he was arrested.
Mm-hmm.
He just insisted that some anonymous criminal had given out this poisoned candy.
Sure. Okay.
The jury took less than an hour, 45 minutes to be exact, to find Ronald O'Brien guilty of murder.
Wow.
And he was sentenced to death. This man was so desperate for money that he was willing to kill both of his children. Mm-hmm. He gave both of his children one of these pixie sticks.
Right.
Plus 3 other people's children just to try and cover his tracks.
And one of them was just a random child. Like, I mean, he knew him, but he wasn't even with them.
I mean, his neighbor's kids were unrelated at all. It was just to say, look, they all died. I didn't do it.
Right. I was going to say, it was just trying to cover his tracks, like you said.
10 years after his conviction, on March 31st, 1984, Ronald O'Brien was executed via lethal injection. Demonstrators actually stood outside the prison in Halloween masks, yelling trick-or-treat as he died.
Oh, wow.
Ronald O'Brien became known as the Candy Man and also as the man that killed Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
Because kids in that town didn't trick-or-treat for several years after the murder.
Oh, yeah.
And to this day, parents all over the world are weary of trick-or-treat candy.
Yeah.
I mean, you check for signs of tampering. You look to see, has this one been opened? And you check all the candy before you let your kids eat it. Primarily, I mean, the idea that people are putting bad things in Halloween candy has been around since trick-or-treating started.
Yeah.
But this was the first set documented case of a child died after eating trick-or-treat candy.
Right.
And this is what solidified that fear of,
right,
of candy being laced with drugs or having razor blades in them or, you know, terrible things.
Right. Well, and I mean, you don't, we all look at it as an urban legend, but when something like this actually happens, it just kind of makes it a little bit more true. You start to see how scary humans can be.
Right. And I think it's, to me, it's even scarier that it was his father the whole time.
Exactly.
And not a random stranger.
Right. Like, it would make more sense. Well, it doesn't, but it does make more sense for it to be just some random person giving out,
right,
candy. But, like, his own dad? Over money.
Over money.
So sad.
But that's why you should possibly check your kids' trick-or-treat candy, I guess. I mean,
yeah, I always do anyway.
You never know.
Yeah, you never know.
But we hope you guys enjoyed our special spooky Halloween episode.
And we hope you have a safe and happy Halloween.
And lots of trick-or-treat candy with no razor blades, drugs, or any other terrible things in them.
Yes.
Don't be afraid of your candy. Sorry if we made you afraid of your candy.
Just check it, though. Thanks for listening.
Like us on Facebook at True Crimes and Weird Times Podcast.
Follow us on Instagram at True Crimes Weird Times.
Email us your stories at truecrimesweirdtimes@gmail.com.
Can't wait for the next episode? Check out our Patreon for bonus episodes and more.
And if you enjoyed the show, make sure to subscribe and leave a review.
Bye!